Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about alleliopathy. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at the USMCA as it faces a review this year. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about how the alleliopathy was discovered. In our Cool Beans That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Feel Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. All right, well, you guys enjoying all the snow that we've got so far?
Not really.
If it stays till Christmas, it'll be great. Because it is nice having snow on Christmas. It just feels nicer. But this is very early for us to get snow. And, like, there's areas, like, Bill, we were on that call yesterday with a colleague, or I don't know what you call it, another agronomist in
Iowa,
and they got more snow than we've got. You know, there's areas that got hammered with, he said, two weekends in a row, they got basically a foot.
Well, I suppose that Chicago got hit and we didn't.
Right.
So it was probably
that same storm. So what else is crazy? It's not just Wisconsin. It's the whole Midwest. And
yeah.
Wasn't last year at this time the whole Midwest was bare?
Yeah, it was cold, but we had no snow. And that's the funny thing is now we're getting cold and snow, which so the snow is good because it's protecting hay fields, wheat fields,
yes.
Everything else. Like it's nice to have the protective blanket because this weekend now they're talking single digits with lows in the negatives.
Yep.
So, I mean, we need the snow for that. but yeah, I mean, we've obviously had snow earlier. Like the opening of deer hunting this season was late and there was no snow on the ground at that point. The second weekend we had a little bit. But there's been years when we've had snow the opening weekend when opening weekend was earlier because Thanksgiving being late, that pushes everything back. But just the frequency and amount. I mean, we haven't – this earlier this week was probably the heaviest snow that we got so far. But there were a handful of nights where it was like every night we'd get half an inch or an inch, like just this constant – snow.
It was crazy.
Every couple days.
You'd wake up the next morning and you'd have to shovel because there was 2 inches on the ground.
Right.
Inch to two that was just fluffy. And we really had probably 5 shovel snows and 2 snowblower snows, like yep. 2 significant. So that.
And the first snowblower snow was iffy.
Yes.
I mean,
agreed.
It could have been shoveled.
Yeah.
I used my snowblower because I was like, eh. Might as well make sure to get all the bugs worked out of it.
What's the number for you guys where it's like, okay, this is shovel this, I need to get the big guns out?
For me, it's either snowblower or drive over it.
Oh, really? You don't shovel?
No,
I like that. Bill, you're just...
I'll shovel, like, right up against the garage because I don't want, like, under the garage door to have this layer of ice or whatever.
Yeah,
and then I'll do the walk up to the front house. But the driveway, if it's not worth snowblowing, I just
let
just
it
drive over it.
Yeah, I would say it's probably somewhere in the 2 to 3 inch range is a shovel, and then anything over that.
I would agree, 4 inch.
Yeah,
you just get the snowblower. I'll get and on the farm, I think that's probably pretty consistent too. Either you, if it's under, say 3 inches or less, you just drive over it and don't worry about it. And then once you get over that, then let's.
The trouble on the farm is you get drifts around all the buildings.
Yeah, so you might have to still push drifts, and you know,
and that's what I get. You probably maybe don't.
I don't. Where I'm at, it does not drift.
We get a little bit of drift. Like this last one, because the wind had picked up later in the evening, there was like a drift in front of the garage. And then I had like a bare spot. And then it had drifted a little bit closer to the end of the driveway. But...
Which drifts can be worse than...
I'll get, like, the stuff that came a couple days ago, the drifts were 18 inches.
Yeah, it was about, wasn't quite taller than the, I don't even know what the technical term is, the front of the snowblower, the The scoop. I don't know what the technical term is for that part.
The mouth of the housing. The
mouth. Yeah, it was not quite above it, but it was close.
Close.
And yeah, I think the other thing too is if it depends how wet the snow is. Like most of these, even this last one was supposed to be a wetter, heavier snow.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't a.
No.
Yeah, my term for is either snowman snow or not, and this was not a. I thought one thing was odd is I got to think back to like snow days the kids have had, and typically they've been snowman snows when you have a snow day.
Sure.
So, but the first snow day too is always a. Like your school district, Bill, they didn't have a snow day, but
2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hour delay, and it seems like the first one sometimes you overreact because you just don't want to.
I also think there was a middle school holiday concert.
Oh, and then they would have had a...
So I'm guessing that 3/4 of the having school was because they didn't want to deal with all that rescheduling. Because we did have the principal, we just, after the concert, walked by her, and she's like, yeah, it was so nice we could have school because we didn't want to have to reschedule the concert, and everybody took time off of their work day and just all the logistics of that. So I think that played. If it was just a random Wednesday, we probably would have canceled too, but because there was a middle school concert, I think they wanted it to go. And in reality, by 10 o'clock, it was fine.
It was, right.
Yeah.
Yep. No, definitely a 2 hour delay was sufficient. Yeah.
And my kids were complaining about having to go to school the full day the next day. And we're like, yeah, but you went yesterday and you got credit for the whole day and you didn't even have to go the whole day and you got credit for it. So, and now you still got a snow day in the bank. So,
yeah, my son was supposed to have, so they have an outdoor education class in the middle school, and like the end of it is a cookout, and their cookout was supposed to be yesterday, which I'm not sure if it was a good or a bad thing. We'll see what he says tonight.
Were they going to have it? But, did they reschedule it to today then?
I don't know. I don't know if he rescheduled it to like when they were going to have it. I sent the stuff with them either way,
sure,
just in case. But he said they told him that they were going to have to be outside for it. And so yesterday would have been warmer, or Wednesday when we had the snow day would have been warmer. So I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad, like,
yeah,
if they still are going to make it outside.
When it gets cold,
if they'll just cancel it all together and I'll have 40 Capri Suns that I sent with them coming back. But
they might be frozen.
Sounds like a challenge, man.
I will not be drinking.
Sounds like you are. Suns.
I'm sure you don't want Harrison to drink 40 Capri Suns.
No, nor do I want my Mara and Harrison to drink 20 apiece.
Or the four of you to drink 10 apiece. That's probably still too many.
That's still more than enough. Save them for a party.
How many ounces is Capri Sun? It's like
6?
4? Okay.
4? Maybe. I don't know.
Just say
how much tired, like it doesn't.
But how much sugar is that?
Yeah, right.
6 ounces, probably 3/4 of it.
60% of the time.
Oh, you're right, man. 6 ounces. So there's more than I thought.
Boom. I'll take the win. So we got the Broncos this weekend for the Packers, right?
Yeah,
Mile High game.
We finished the Bears off.
And we get them again next week after the Broncos in Chicago.
Somebody on the radio today was complaining because it sounds like locally the fans are talking more about like the Bear Week next, like the Bears, like, oh, we got to make sure we beat them again.
Right.
And they were interviewing a reporter, and the reporter's like, in the building, they're talking about the Broncos right? Not the Bears.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, they haven't even thought about going to Chicago yet. They're on the Broncos. Like, this is a fan thing to be worried about the Bears in 2 weeks.
Right.
And not.
It does have a weird. People are complaining about, like, playing them, and I'm like, it's not a big deal. But now that we're in the sandwich of it, it is. I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's like, we just thought of them, beat them, and now we're automatically thinking of them again.
Well, it's a Saturday night game, so it's going to be a weird week. Not as bad as a Thursday night game, but But still a shorter week. It was a close game, but rivalry games almost always are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see the concern.
I was at the Bear-Packer home game and sat next to a Bear fan.
Ooh.
And my immediate move is, like, to just say to him, good luck. I hope any opposing fan. Bear was most difficult, actually. Because usually, like, Bear and Cowboy fans, I know I've had a hard time. But then it's just, then I don't. Then I look the other way and we don't talk. You know, if they want to talk, it's fine. But you just try to just say good luck. Then it's not this weird tension the whole time. So I just turned to him and said, good luck. And he was mostly drunk, but not crazy. And he was like, well, good luck to you. And he said, he called it even before the game. He's like, you're going to beat us today, but we're going to beat you the next two times, is what his statement was.
Ooh, so that's playoffs.
Right. That was his immediate. And so far, he's been
so
good, but it was good.
What did he do after? Because was the interception at the end of the game on the other side?
Oh, no, it was right. It was right in front of us. And when that play was happening, like right away in the play, when you saw him fake the handoff, you could see Cole Kmet
just wide open.
Wide open. So he's just, you know, Cole Kmet. He's just this Bear fans yelling that. And then you see the ball in the air. And from our vantage point, Keyshawn Nixon was not in the picture. So holy crap, like it's going to be an easy touch. You know, it looked, and then it was kind of underthrown and Keyshawn faded back and intercepted it. And then, it was multiple Bear fans next to me and they just sat and put their head down. And it was the most satisfying and sad thing. You know, like it was just, it was both awesome and you just felt a little bad too at the same time.
But it's been interesting since then. Like I don't know if it's just from watching the game or whatever. Like my feed on Facebook's been full of these videos of more analysis of that game than I think the first moon landing. Just like, because the one I saw showed, like, he could have had somebody else.
There was a wide receiver open.
Yeah. Open in the open field.
In the middle.
Instead of making that throw.
What I would say, and then he has to wait barely a second, but then Keyshawn Nixon doesn't fade back, and he's, like, that one's a hard one.
They probably get the first down.
True. And
right,
and they have timeouts left.
All they needed was a first down.
Correct.
Enough time they could have.
It was crazy. They were going for the win.
They were going for it all.
And they would have went for two and probably, well, who knows, because they were able to stop him on a third and very short before that. So who knows? But, yeah, it was a good game, though, like that the Packers just could hold, because they were starting to crump. The defense was tired.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, to put up that stand was,
they had, like right after half, three and out, gave it up, and then another three and out, I think, right?
Right.
The Packers offense. Right. So they had, the Bears were on, Packers were on defense a lot in that third
quarter. Right. And then the fourth quarter, luckily, though, the offense kind of came alive and was decent too.
It's a very typical Packers second half lately, it seems. Like, you just can't get anything going in either the game's on the line or you're behind, and they can score in, like, 30 seconds.
Right.
But only when in the scenario of, like, there's pressure. Like, there's no pressure if they're ahead, whatever, then they seem to, like, fall on their face sometimes.
Win's a win.
Yep.
We'll take it.
28 instead of 27 this time.
My feed is Bear fans, as my son would say, crashing out.
Nice.
Like, the video of them and then the reaction they have to when that interception happened. That, I don't know how I got that, but there's, like,
yeah, no. I've seen one too where it's split, where you get like a Packer fan on one side and a Bears fan on the other side, and the same thing, like one's celebrating, one's like crying in their cereal. So,
yeah, going into our topic, I sitting next to a Bear fan, I was throwing good praises, but I was
throwing your,
deep down throwing alleopathy.
You were trying to
him to
kill him
to
just suppress his happiness.
Suppress the bareness next to me. And it's not even the bareness, it's the Chicago-ness.
Yes.
It's not, like, that in general, too. It's not that I don't dislike Bear fans, I don't, like, this guy was lived, like, grew up in Chicago, now lives in Milwaukee, he told me.
Oh, sure.
That's one of the questions, too. I said, where are you from? And usually if they're, like, fairly local but like another team, they're usually less different. Like, it's the Chicago-ness of the Bear fans.
It's like Cub fans, right?
They're yes.
Just A's.
Yeah.
What was he doing in a non-Milwaukee package game? You'd think he'd be at the Milwaukee
game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like Todd mentioned there, we're going to talk allelopathy today, which is a word that not only gets mispronounced.
Yeah, I just said it, allelopathy. So what's the correct? Is allelio?
I don't know. We'd have to. I don't know if allelopathy. I've always said it allelopathic. Like, if it's allelopathy or allelopathy, or, like, feel like it's always pronounced differently depending on who you talk to. It's kind of like triticale, triticale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is right? I don't know. Does it matter? Probably not. As long as you know what you're talking about, you can get the gist of it. What?
We can have the computer.
That doesn't even sound right. It sounds like whoa-whoa-whoa-pap-it.
Yeah, I don't know if it. I don't know if the computer knows either.
Does your computer have a virus? It sounds like it's got a cold.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what is allelopathy? You've probably heard the term before. You probably have had someone talk about it in the context of how cover crops specifically might be affecting not only weeds, but your cash crop. So according to the internet.
Or Webster.
Allelopathy is a natural phenomenon where one organism releases biochemicals or allelochemicals that affect the growth, survival, or reproduction of other nearby organisms, often plants, to reduce competition for resources like light, water, and nutrients, with examples being a black walnut tree inhibiting other plants or ryegrass suppressing weeds as a cover crop. So I have a list here. So we talk about it mainly in terms of rye.
Pretty much exclusively.
Yeah.
As rye.
And rye is not the only plant, especially cover crop plant in particular, that has an effect like this, but it is the most commonly, it's a very commonly used cover crop and the most commonly studied and talked about in terms of weed suppression because of the allelopathic effects. So I looked up a fact sheet here from USDA, and this one's happens to be from Missouri, so it gives a little bit of a definition. So we already kind of talked about what allelopathy is, but it can release those allelochemicals in multiple ways, depending on what kind of plant it is. So there's exuded by the plant roots, so root exudates, washed off the leaves and shoots into the soil by rainfall, so they might have some sort of oil or something on the actual plant itself that gets washed into the ground, or released by decaying residues. And I don't believe those are, you know, something where it's one or the other. I think there are probably plants that have both, where or multiple of the three. Have two or three different ways of doing it. And so it's kind of interesting to think about how allelopathy might affect the crops, because suppressing weeds is really good, but setting back your cash crop is really bad. So you got to kind of try to find the balance of how that's going to work. And so this USDA article kind of talks about some of the different things, factors to consider, how long it takes for things to break down, what your danger zone is. So, if, for example, we talked about cereal rye, and we were talking about this before recording. So 10 to 14 days prior to planting corn is kind of the recommendation if you want to avoid any effect on your corn, is to terminate it 10 to 14 days before planting. That doesn't mean that you can't plant into rye, because we've seen that done and seen it done successfully.
That does make you want to think twice about planting green then, right? If you're
right.
If that 10 to 14 days is what you want to wait from termination to planting, well, now our corn is germinating and it's just starting to grow 10 to 14 days after planting in most years. So we're right in that danger zone.
And so I actually saw at a conference a couple years ago some research done by Iowa State that talked about planting green and the effects. And their recommendation was on the shorter end. They were at the 10 days, like minimum 10 days. So you could go longer, but 10 days was kind of that sweet spot for having the least effect on your cash crop. But they also noted that across other, it was done across, I think, 5 or 6 states, that Wisconsin, where we live, seems to have a higher success rate with planting green than some of the other states. So whether it's our soils, our temperatures, or both, some combination thereof, we seem to have a little bit better luck than some of the I states and other places south of us in using rye.
We're just immune.
Yeah, we got that figured out.
We're hardened.
And when you think about the corn varieties that we're growing are shorter day length and therefore have to be more hardy for this climate, so there may be other factors in their genetics that lend them to be more resistant to the allelopathic effect, but I can't say that for certain. But there seems to be something about our climate, environment, whatever, that seems to affect it. But rye is not the only cover crop that has any sort of allelopathic effect. So rye, wheat, and fescue as a cover crop can suppress weeds through the residue. And so that kind of gets into the carbon and nitrogen side of things and how long it takes for that residue to break down and you get that nice coverage or soil armor.
We don't think about wheat as being allelopathic because there's been more interest in cover crops with wheat, but generally we're not using wheat as a cover crop, so we're not thinking about that.
Right. And wheat, when you're comparing rye to wheat, you don't get as much residue with the wheat generally because the wheat doesn't get as tall as a rye. Rye shoots up really fast. Rye matures very quickly in general compared to wheat. So it's got benefits to it as a cover crop. I do have a couple farms that use it as cover or mix it in anyway. But yeah, it is not as popular as rye when it comes to that.
And I do think the amount of the compounds that are phytotoxic is much higher in rye than wheat.
Right.
So it's, like you, Matt, you're saying, like, it also grows faster and it has more of those compounds. So I think one of the reasons we don't talk about it in wheat is just we don't see that as being as bad as what rye is, nearly as bad. So,
and obviously wheat's a cash crop and we have to spray weeds in wheat to get good wheat stands. So
right. We
know it's not probably as powerful, like you said, that as phytotoxic as other ones, because we don't, you know, we still have to manage weeds in it, so it's not having a large overall effect on everything. I'm sure it is suppressing certain things.
The other thing to think about in both of these is typically, like, your crop can be, depending on the crop, the sensitivity to that allelopathic effect can be different. So corn and soybeans generally is less affected by the rye versus a smaller seeded weed or crop. So still can be affected, but if you've got like a very large seed with a lot of reserves, it's not as affected as a different seed. So some of the times too, there's obviously we got to watch all the crops and all the interactions, but luckily usually corn is one of the least sensitive, but we still don't want any sensitivity to our cash crop.
Right.
So,
another one that's, I guess we don't really think about allelopathy with, but I thought was interesting, was sorghum. So sorghum, which again is another one we can grow as a feed, has the ability to suppress some grasses. So sorghum being a grass itself can suppress other grasses. And in particular, they mentioned Bermuda grass and nut sedge as what's it's kind of suppressing. So if you have a heavy nut sedge issue, that might be a good place to grow sorghum and see what kind of effect it can have on that. Sunflowers, so, you know, all these things we've done in cover crop mixes and we've seen in mixes. So whatever suppression they're getting can depend on what kind of plant. So you may get some grass effect, you may get some on broadleaves, but it seems to vary.
I do think, just to finish off the sorghum one, I think it is interesting that rarely, I don't think I've ever seen nutsedge in sorghum, and I never put that together that it's probably the allelopathy, not something else going on that we're doing, because the herbicides we're using on it aren't any different than corn herbicides or something like that. I also like, some of these have very unique names of the phytotoxins. So sorghum is sorghalone, is what it releases from the roots.
Cool.
Primarily. And there too, it releases from the roots, which wears the nutsedge, you know, those, the nuts of the nutsedge, the sort of the seed soil. Nutlets are in the soil. So it can affect those because it's more mainly from the root exudates. So the what is unique on all of these is we put them in this big group of allelopathic, but they're very different in what and how they interact with other plants.
Right. Like I mentioned before, so that NRCS document had the kind of the three different, so the grow, the root exudates, the washing off leaves, whether it's oil or some sort of compound in leaves, or the decaying residues. So their modes of action, if you think of it like a like you would on the chemical side, are different depending on what species. So like sunflower, it specifically mentions root exudates as the potential for an allelopathic effect from a sunflower. And I've never grown, or can't say that I've worked with anyone who grows specifically just sunflowers. I know there's people out there, and most of the time it's decorative or for bird seed. So I don't know what kind of, what their typical management program is with sunflowers. But I know we can put them in mixes and still get other things to grow around them. But so that exudes something through the roots that can inhibit growth. And I'm kind of wondering if it's more on the decaying side. If once the plant dies, then it releases those root exudates, or it could be something more specific to a particular type of plant. But it's another one that I've never thought of as allelopathic because we don't talk about it. And it says, roots, leaves, and hulls can inhibit the growth of nearby plants, especially sensitive ones like beans, potatoes, and some vegetables by releasing its phytotoxins. So wouldn't be a good one to try the three sisters with.
Don't plant it in your garden. Make it your own garden.
That's a good question. Do any of the, none of the three sisters are allelopathic?
Corn, beans, and squash, yeah.
Yeah. I don't, so which makes sense.
Right.
Or the,
one sister would be mad at the other.
Right.
Two.
So I think that is an interesting, yeah, observation.
Buckwheat's another one that's pretty common in diverse mixes, but can have an effect on beans. So that might be something to consider if you're going. Just says beans. I don't know if it's specifically soybeans are lumped into that or more like a dry bean, but could be something to consider if you're going to a soybean, that maybe having buckwheat in the system wouldn't be as beneficial. And then mustards and radishes. Again, we look at them in cover crop mixes, see them quite a bit, but don't think of them usually as much allelopathic, but they do take over and can shade out other things if you get enough growth on the leaf structure. I mean, I've seen that, especially in like an interseeding situation where it's all that's left at the end of the day, because it's not only do they scavenge nutrients really well and can pull things away, and that, I guess, in some form is kind of an allelopathic effect by taking away the nutrients from others.
Must be allelopathic to oats, because all the mustard we pulled in the oats, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
It's crazy.
So not just rye, but all other things can be allelopathic. And so using them to your benefit, so can be easy, but it's a management decision. So like we talked about specifically rye, there's been research looking at how it can affect other plants, and proximity seems to be one of the big things when it comes to lilypathy. Like, how close is it to another plant to be affected? So it doesn't seem like it's a big range, depending on, like, sunflowers I could see being a bigger range, just because if you ever look at a sunflower's root mass, they spread out, and they're very, they don't go very deep, but they will spread out around the base quite a bit and kind of have this flat, kind of scraggly root system that could really affect. Whereas things like wheat and rye, barley, it's another one I saw an article recently saying winter barley has really good weed suppression effects to it. They have more of a down, like going down and deeper down root system that if you're right next to another plant, as long as the roots aren't touching, it probably wouldn't have as much of an effect on it as it would a sunflower. So it's definitely something you should be having in the back of your mind, especially if you're planting cover crops pretty routinely. And one of the things that that same Iowa State study that I talked about had was, in absence of, you know, that termination timing. So if you don't, if you want to plant green and you don't want to terminate 10 to 14 days before you plant, another option would be to leave space between the corn and the rye. And that seems to lessen the effect of the allelopathy. So if you either skip a row and then plant your corn into that row when you establish the rye, or some people do, they call it biostrips, where you plant, say, like a radish or something that's going to die, or oats, in between, rather than just completely skipping it. That would be another way, or strip till is another way.
I was just going to bring that up, Matt. I would imagine strip till would do the same thing, because yep, you're tilling up that, that rye, whether it's you do the strip in the fall or you do it in the spring, or if you do both, you do your strip in the fall and then freshen in the spring. Yeah, I would think that would do the same thing.
So you could still get your weed suppression aspect of it without harming your cash crop in scenarios like that. So there are ways to manage around it and still get the benefit. I know UW's done a lot of research the last few years into, you know, the weed suppression side of cover crops, and whether it's using the allelopathic effect or even just covering an amount of real estate. Like, there's a certain amount of biomass where you, if you can get that much out there when you terminate, it'll help kind of create that weed suppressing mat to cover everything. So one of the other things I thought was interesting about this topic is I never realized how many other plants that we use, whether it's in gardening or even trees. Like, I never really knew black walnut was an allelopathic type of tree. I know it's a fairly rare tree, and you usually don't find it in a lot of forests, and that's probably why, is the competition side. Either you have all black walnut or probably not as much.
And that the reading about that one is one of the most allelopathic. Like, it really can suppress most things around it.
Yeah, it releases the juglone.
Yeah.
Which is...
sounds like
a wonderful allelochemical name.
Sounds like a Marvel villain.
I was thinking it sounds like the followers of the Insane Clown Posse, the Juggalos.
Yeah.
I was thinking a Fortnite gun.
Ah, yeah, that would also fit.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to me, you know, it says black walnuts are toxic to apples, like pine plants, so pine trees or pine bushes. Makes total sense, but I really would be curious to find out how they knew that black walnut was toxic to tomatoes. So I feel like under a tree is not somewhere you would normally plant a tomato plant. So there are other, eucalyptus is one, and that's poisonous in all sorts of ways, because it's even poisonous to animals that eat it, like koalas. The tree of heaven, manuka and kanuka, and sumac, which is another one I've heard of, but also rhododendron can be allelopathic as well. So it's not just cereals or things of the mustard family. There are other plants as well. And then even in the garden, asparagus can release chemicals that affect its neighbors. So probably one of the reasons it's hard to establish is because it's going to kill everything else around it. And
I think asparagus is unique and neat because it's the one of them is the same thing that makes your urine stink. So when you pee and it stinks after eating asparagus, that's the stuff.
You're peeing weed killer.
That's the stuff that's...
So you should pee in your garden?
After eating don't pee in your garden after you eat asparagus.
It'll kill the weeds.
Just find some water.
Yeah.
Beans and peas can affect alliums like onions and garlic. So that was kind of interesting. Never really thought of... And that's a very specific one, too. Like we talked about, beans are three sister, you know, corn, beans, and squash. So it doesn't affect the corn or the squash, but it can affect bulbs like onions or garlic. And then tomatoes and potatoes, being part of the nightshade family.
Again, they're easily allelopathed.
Right.
Right? They're sensitive to it.
They're sensitive to the jugalone.
Jugalone.
So you can't grow potatoes under a black walnut tree either. And then, Todd, you had asked me right away when you were looking over kind of this list why I included invasive species on here. But that's because they tend to have allelopathic effects, and that's why they're so effective at taking over an environment, is things like garlic mustard, purple loosestrife, spotted knapweed, and common buckthorn are able to eliminate the competition and kind of take over an area, and that's what makes them so invasive. So,
good thing Phragmites isn't on this list.
Yes, yeah.
It just takes
like
over anyways.
Probably, even though it's not on the list, it could very well be something that is allelopathic. This is not it's meant to be an end-all, be-all, comprehensive list of things that are allelopathic, but so while it may sound bad to have that competition, like we said, there's options to use some of these plants in a way that will help suppress weeds and not affect your cash crop. If you plan it out fairly well and manage it correctly, you can still have the benefit of the allelopathy without suffering the consequences on your cash crop. So
yeah, one thing to like we always say, more diverse mixes are better in a cover crop, all that. But in this case, if you're looking at allelopathy, maybe not, because there might be that antagonistic. And then one of the things that one step further of allelopathy is autotoxicity, which is when it's allelopathic against itself. So plants, alfalfa is the biggest one we deal with.
Yep.
Asparagus also had that same autotoxicity and many other plants. But those are two that we deal with that we gotta terminate them. We gotta leave it the soil rest without that plant in it because it's gonna harm itself. So I think that's a unique thing too that we deal with at times and can be confusing because it's like, well, is this gonna be a problem? Well, it probably will. So let's give it a break and
I mean, we'd never rotate alfalfa fields if we could just go back and
right. Shove
alfalfa back.
Put it back into it, right?
But you can't because after a while, it just...
Yeah, we just keep interseeding alfalfa, right? Just to keep the stand
going. That'd be awesome.
5 years later.
Right. Never have to tear out your favorite hayfield.
Yeah.
Just stay there.
That goes in the GMO want list, I feel like.
We'd never have first year corn.
But then, you wouldn't get the corn benefit.
We could still...
If alfalfa was cheap enough, we could use it as a cover crop. But
although that would definitely... help us increase our
what I would like about is
profitability on
where I struggle is you plant a field and it doesn't take well or it doesn't you have a poor stand of alfalfa and it's only been a half a year, a year. And you can interseed and it'll kind of work, but at the same time there's enough that I see where I think it just makes you feel better that you did something, but it doesn't always work, where it'd be nice to if you had a poor stand right away that we could go interseed it with more alfalfa and you knew it would all come and not be antagonistic against itself.
Hopes and dreams. But yeah, so that's a little bit about allelopathy. So next time you hear that word, whether it's allelopathy or allelopathic, now you'll have a pretty good understanding of what it means and why it can be important to understand, especially if you are growing cover crops and want to make sure you're not harming your cash crop with your cover crop. So now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So the USMCA is facing a 2026 review, which means three options are on the table. Exit, revision, or renegotiation are all possible as a result of this. So the USMCA, or the trade agreement, used to be known as NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, USMCA, replaced that during President Trump's first term, and it is set up to be reviewed. So U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer said the U.S. could withdraw from its trilateral trade deal with Canada and Mexico. Said there are also other options on the table headed into the review for 2026. Exits one, could be exited, could be revised. Could it be renegotiated? Yes. So all those are possibilities, and that is the purpose of the clause, so that everyone can get around the table and figure out, you know, are things going well? Is the trade agreement working? And if not, how can we change it or make different decisions to benefit our economic growth? So economic relationship with Canada is very, very different than the economic relationship with Mexico, according to Greer. He said the labor situation is different, import-export profile is different, and the rule of law is very different. So the framework for the USMCA was set to terminate after 16 years with mandatory review in 2026. It gives the opportunity to extend the agreement beyond its current expiration date of 2036. So we're about 5 years in doing this review. Could go to 2036 or longer, depending on what they come up with. The review will begin in July of 2026. So with a lot of the current thing, tariffs and other trade things happening right now could have an impact on those negotiations once that happens next summer. So it'll be something to watch. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So since we're talking allelopathy, how was it discovered? Well, as we mentioned before, allelopathy is a biological phenomenon in which an organism produces one or more biochemicals that influence the germination, growth, survival, and reproduction of other organisms. These biochemicals are known as allelochemicals and can have beneficial or detrimental effects on target organisms within their community. Allelopathy is often used narrowly to describe chemically mediated competition between plants. However, it is sometimes defined more broadly as chemically mediated competition between any type of organism. Original concept was developed by Hans Molisch in 1937, which was when he saw what seemed to focus on only interactions between plants, between microorganisms, and between microorganisms and plants. Allelochemicals are a subset of secondary metabolites, which are not directly required for metabolism, i.e. growth, development, or reproduction of the allelopathic organism. Allelopathic interactions are an important factor in determining species distribution and abundance within plant communities. They're also thought to be important in the success of many invasive plants, like we talked about earlier. So specific examples include black walnut, black crowberry, spotted knapweed, garlic mustard, and nutgrass. Allelopathy is classified as a biotic factor. It involves chemical interactions between living organisms, commonly mostly about plants. Allelopathy is frequently mistaken for resource competition, which is another biotic factor in which organisms compete for limited abiotic resources such as sunlight, water, and soil nutrients. However, the two processes generally are functionally distinct. While allelopathy introduces the inhibition chemical agent to the environment, resource competition exists from the depletion of those resources. So it is The name comes from the Greek derivation of allelo and pathos, which means mutual suffering. So
everybody suffers.
Yep. Nobody goes home happy.
Thank you, Matt. I'm not even going to go there. I had some things I was thinking about that would be mutual suffering, but...
The Vikings win? Bears fans and Packer fans?
Yes.
Mutual suffering would be, yeah, all, the whole NFC North sitting out the playoffs somehow. That would be that mutual suffering, yeah. Which could happen.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's very easy now. Just go to Spotify on your iPhone or Android phone, and you can search Tilt Talk Radio, or you can listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tiltag.com/podcast, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilt Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our cool beans. That's corny with some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week. Nationwide, E15 could be nearing the finish line. So the head of the American Farm Bureau Federation and possibly the best name in agriculture that I can think of, Zippy Duval, said year-round E15 that might be within reach. Close, really close. So it will take a large grassroots effort for farmers to make the case that higher ethanol blends can significantly increase demand. Need a good push on Congress to make sure we get that put into statute. We have unity with the commodity groups. We've worked really hard with the petroleum groups. Earlier this fall, the American Petroleum Institute reversed its support, but Duval said that if we can come to an agreement on a few little bumps on what we think ought to be done, then it will be a non-issue. The Kansas Farm Bureau President Joe Newland said it will likely have an immediate impact on bottom lines. If you put that product in all pumps and stations across this country, it will take big relief off the corn producer. During a White House meeting recently, said the president remains committed to expanding ethanol demand and will likely sign legislation to that effect. So, could be seeing year-round ethanol, which would be kind of cool.
Thanks to Zippy.
Thanks, Zippy. Our That's Corny this week. It's a 85-year-old farmer facing some pretty stiff penalties as a result of water violations. So just reading this story makes me really glad we don't deal with water rights here in the state of Wisconsin. It sounds awful. So the government is preparing to take private land and legacy of an 85-year-old farmer for the crime of irrigation. Why? Because he watered his crops without regulatory approval. He didn't use a drop past his legal rights, but he put it in the wrong field, and therefore that makes him a criminal, and the state wants to take everything I have, said Bob Grief. And that's a really great name for someone going through grief. It's all about control and power. So because of his water violations, the Washington State Department of Ecology levied a series of fines totaling $121,000 and slapped a lien on his property. Department issued press releases championing its actions and portrayed Grief as an environmental outlaw. Notably, ecology officials are not penalizing Grief for the amount of water he used, but rather the location it was applied. So even though he used a water consultant, which didn't know was a thing until I read this article, he had submitted permits back in, I think it was the 90s, just trying to find the right dates here, in order to put his water on both parts of his field. Oh, sorry, it was 1975. So he filed to irrigate both the north and south section of his farm, and it was approved in 1975. But when the ecology department certified the right in 1983, they left out the south part, possibly an error. And so even though he's been irrigating for several years and farming the same piece, because of that potential little snafu, he is forced to deal with these issues and not be able to irrigate part of his farm. And so while he's still fighting it, it could end up badly for him. Hopefully things will work out, but we'll see what happens. Can't imagine, yeah. What were you doing? Watering crops. Would you use too much water? No. Just put it in the wrong spot. That would be pretty bad.
Part of the four R's.
That's right. Right rate, right time, right source, right place. All right. Now we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. So, former State Senator Joan Balwig received the Distinguished Service to Wisconsin Agriculture Award on December 7th, so just a few days ago. Former State Senator Joan Balwig received the award for her outstanding contributions to Wisconsin's agriculture community during the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation's 106th annual meeting in the Wisconsin Dells. Senator Balwig has been a steadfast advocate for Wisconsin agriculture throughout her legislative career. She has consistently worked to ensure that farmers and rural communities are represented in policy discussions at the Capitol. Known for her thoughtful and steady leadership, Senator Balwig has been recognized for effectively communicating the needs of farmers to her colleagues in supporting practical, farm-focused solutions. She began her public service career in local government while working on her family's farm implement business. She was elected to the Marquezan City Council in 1986, later served as mayor in 1991, winning re-election twice. In 2004, she was elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly, where she served 8 terms and held caucus leadership roles, including majority caucus chair. In 2020, she was elected to the State Senate and was elected caucus vice chair in 2023. She's been a longtime Farm Bureau member, and she's understood the mission of the organization and worked closely with members to address their concerns, regularly attends county meetings and events, listens to members, and served as a trusted partner in shaping policy solutions. Her dedication and deep roots in agriculture have earned her the respect of farmers and colleagues alike. So congratulations to her on receiving that award for a long career in agriculture. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about allelopathy and what that means, what kind of effect it can have, and how it might be useful for you as a farmer. In our spotlight, we took a look at the USMCA, which is up for review next summer. Ag History Minute talked about the discovery of allelopathy and its effects. Cool Beans this week, Zippy Duval says nationwide year-round E15 could be nearing the finish line. That's Corny is a farmer, 85-year-old farmer in Washington State, facing severe penalties for irrigating the wrong field. And our Field Good Friday is State Senator Joan Balwig receiving the Distinguished Service to Wisconsin Agriculture Award. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.